And then in 2012, I found a spot on my arm that turned out to be melanoma. So from poor behavior as a kid, then becoming a skin cancer expert, that was actually the focus of my practice, was skin cancer melanoma. I now am my own worst nightmare. And that was kind of just the beginning. Like, skin cancer was the wake-up call for me. Because at the time I thought I was doing everything right. I was running ultra marathons. I was wearing my sunscreen. I was following the latest fads and trends of dieting. The proverbial shit hit the fan for me because it was the skin cancer. And then I tore my hip. Then there was hormone issues, and literally my health just swirled the drain.
This is the Entrepology Podcast. The podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So badass is a really great way to describe my guest today. Dr. Kira Barr is a global speaker, international bestselling author. She's an educator, a dual board certified dermatologist, and she's been in practice for the last 20 years. But what makes her really exceptional at being able to talk about skin health in an integrative capacity is her own story as a cancer survivor. As someone ironically trained in dermatology, she found herself face to face with a diagnosis of skin cancer herself. And it was really part of what galvanized her to want to look at skin health from an upstream perspective. Our conversation looked at the ins and outs of sunscreen. Should we be using it? Should we not? And if we are, what types of things should we be looking at? What are some of the key factors that we see in terms of people who have exceptional skin health? And what are some of the things that we should be looking at if skin health is something that you have struggled with or want to look at from a preventative capacity? This is a highly informative episode, but it's something I think we can all universally relate to. Our skin is one of those things that we project outwardly. It's part of our brand. It gives us confidence. It's critical to us when we're talking about health, but also when we have the confidence to step forward as entrepreneurs on a mission that we are all focused on. This was a really incredible conversation, and it is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Kira Barr. Dr. Kira Barr, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be chatting with you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And we were both at Mindshare this year, but like didn't connect there, connected afterwards, as I felt like so many of my connections with that community happened. But I've heard from so many people and have since heard from you the impact of your message. And I would love for you to share with this audience your story and your journey about what got you to this place. And then we're going to talk in detail about skin and how skin is a metaphor for one's brand, one's health, and how it's really a barometer in terms of how they're doing with respect to their health and looking forward. So take us through your journey. What got you here?
It's really interesting because I'm in my mid-40s now, and it's only recently that I've kind of put all the pieces together of actually how I wound up here. So if I really think about it, it goes back to my childhood. I was made fun of, actually. I guess I never would have thought about it as being bullied, but in a sense it was. Made fun of for what was on my skin. I had was born with two birthmarks on my face, and when I went to elementary school, I was made fun of for them. People called them coffee stains and called me coffee stain face. from not thinking much of them, I quickly became so self-conscious and self-aware and ashamed of what my skin looked like, and wound up figuring out pretty quickly that I could hide those spots by getting a tan. And I spent the majority of my young life and my young adult life worshiping the sun, getting burned, which was not in my best interest because my dad is a redhead with light eyes. And despite being a brunette, I have his fair skin and accumulated a ton of sun damage. Fast forward, I go to medical school. I find the skin fascinating, become a dermatologist. Learn how damaging my behavior really had been. Now is, I guess, in 2012, you know, as a dermatologist, I'm very acutely aware of checking my skin on a regular basis because for a decade I was having growing and changing pigmented lesions, and a lot of them did come back as atypical. And then in 2012, I found a spot on my arm that turned out to be melanoma. So poor behavior as a kid, then becoming a skin cancer expert, that was actually the focus of my practice, was skin cancer melanoma. I now am my own worst nightmare. And that was kind of just the beginning. Like, skin cancer was the wake-up call for me, because at the time I thought I was doing everything right. I was running ultra marathons. I was wearing my sunscreen. I was following the latest fads and trends of dieting, if I'm allowed to, you know, the proverbial shit hit the fan for me because it was the skin cancer. And then I tore my hip, and then there was hormone issues, and literally my health just swirled the drain. And that's pretty much when I had to come to terms with the fact that everything that I thought I was doing that was right was completely wrong, and really found a way, thankfully with help of mentors and physicians and all sorts of people thrown in the mix, really helped me build my resilience back, get my health back. And that has been, you know, the step-by-step process of kind of getting back on track and leading me where I am today, and helping other women in particular really empower them to take back control of their health, their life, from a completely different lens than my allopathic training.
Well, your story is so powerful, and I remember you sharing it this summer. And I often say to clinicians, you don't have to have all of the conditions that your patients have to be able to empathize. But when you do, and when you come through your own health journey, it's particularly powerful. How did your own experience shift how you practice? So from that traditional allopathic model to your approach now.
At the time of my diagnosis, I actually had an opportunity to, I left academics. And when we moved from California to Washington, I actually walked away from practice. That's when my health kind of fell apart and built it back up. And what I found is that I didn't want to go practice the way I was. Like, writing a prescription, I had like a visceral reaction to it. Like, I just can't put a Band-Aid on the problem. I mean, I think topical steroids have a place. Antibiotics definitely have a place, but not as a first line therapy. And I think my own journey has really opened my eyes to the fact of kind of going back to the roots of what medicine used to be. And hopefully the pendulum is swinging back, of really looking under the hood, of really not just what this is and this is what you use to treat it. It's really asking the question, why is this happening in the first place? You know, what, your skin is such a powerful tool. It is not just your largest organ, right? But it is your most visible. So what's showing up on it is an invitation for you to look deeper into what's happening beneath it. Like, what's showing up on it is, there's a reason for that. We might not know the reason right away, but, you know, with regards to acne, which is a really common problem, not just in teenagers, but, you know, women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, who may have never even had acne when they were teens, all of a sudden they're breaking out. And so it makes you ask the question, like, why now? You know, what is happening in your life? Is your gut health out of balance? Are your hormones out of balance? Like, are you using products that are disrupting your skin microbiome? Like, let's talk about it. Let's figure it out and not just slap topical antibiotics or oral antibiotics on it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because I think a lot of people's experience. You're speaking an Indies language, right? So as soon as someone's like, "We need to go upstream and find the root cause," I'm just at peace. But, you know, I think the story of so many of my patients, and I suspect the same is for you, they come in and you're sort of their last, not necessarily their first choice in terms of addressing their skin health. And they've been through the gamut. They've tried Accutane. They've tried antibiotics. They've tried all these really potent pharmaceutical interventions to be able to, in this case, address their acne. And I find for very few of them, and no one's really ever asked what they're eating. No one's attempted to address their hormones other than maybe blanketly just saying, "We'll put you on the pill for 10 years. What has been your experience in terms of focusing on skin health, in terms of the types of patients that are walking through your door? What kind of stories are you hearing?
Yeah. So right now, actually, I don't even have a clinic. I'm mostly working with women virtually, or, you know, we'll meet in person, but it's not a traditional clinical setting, which is a complete departure. And I never thought that I'd be here. But what I'm finding is, you know, we always talk about nutrition and exercise and people are willing to do that, but it's really the sleep, the stress, reframe the mindset that come last. And that's kind of where I'm going first with people.
Right.
Because I think what I'm finding is those are the biggest contributors. Like, you can diet and supplement till the cows come home. But if you're not addressing the elephant in the room, which is, you know, how are you sleeping? What are your relationships like? What are you, not just with other people, but more importantly with yourself, what's happening between your ears and your brain and all of that, and diving a little bit deeper into that. There's an entire niche, psychodermatology. We know that there's the HPA axis, the hypothalamus, you know, like pituitary adrenal axis with hormone regulation, but studies have shown we actually have that same access in our skin. We're creating these hormones in our skin too. And so what is it, the chicken or is it the egg? We don't know, but it's a powerful communication relay, like all the time, from central to peripheral, from peripheral to central. And so we need to address, you know, the things that are driving those hormones. And that has a lot to do with how we sleep and how we view our world. And so I know that's a really long-winded answer, but I find it's more of almost like the skin is like a byproduct. It's not the first thing that we're really addressing at all.
Can we talk a little bit more about this concept of the HPA axis and how the skin is involved in this piece? Can we break this down for people a little bit more? Because I'm like, this is amazing.
So we always think of like our neurotransmitters and, you know, adrenaline and epinephrine, like the cortisol, like the hormones that come from, you know, the brain to then they stimulate your adrenals and your thyroid, and like everything communicates. But in your skin itself, there's so many receptors and oxytocin, you know, that feel good hormone,
right?
You know, that sense of touch, and that feedback loop, oftentimes stimulated because of triggers at the skin level, going back. It's not that stress or elevation of cortisol is the only reason why you might break out in hives or your rash might get worse, but it certainly is a contributing factor for the exacerbation of such a problem.
Yeah, and can we work like in reverse? If we look at a medication as potent, for example, as Accutane, mm-hmm. What influence does that have from a systemic or long-term perspective? And I think for some people, they're like, well, what are the side effects of Accutane in general? I mean, I think we're caught in medical speak here. So maybe break it down for people in general. What's Accutane used for? What kind of impact does it have? But in the context of what you were just talking about, in terms of the minutiae of how the skin communicates with other systems in the body, does it have an influence on that as well?
Yeah. So Accutane is a very powerful drug. And for many people, it is a savior drug. I mean, I know that there's been a lot in the media and the news and the literature about the side effects of Accutane, which is a retinoid and depression associated with it. But I tell you what, when you are dealing with acne that is like fulminant, like pus everywhere. It's painful. These boils, these cysts, like, and nothing else is working. You know, Accutane definitely has some space. And the side effects are, it's a vitamin A derivative. So vitamin A, it helps skin cell turnover. But with that, it can also cause drying of the mucosal membranes, cracked lips. We get concerned that it can affect your night vision. It can affect the tendons and ligaments and make you a little bit more stiff. There's been a lot in the literature about causing inflammation in the gut and contributing. Is there an association with inflammatory bowel disease? Elevation of your lipid profile and liver function tests as well can be or can irritate the liver, and so that would be reflected in an elevation of your liver function profile. And so we monitor all of these things. I guess those are the downsides of the of Accutane. But like I said, because it does improve skin cell turnover, keeps, you know, acne is derived, you know, the problem is in the hair follicle, and there's the skin cells, there's the bacteria, there's the lipid, the or the sebum, and then there's inflammatory cascade. So what Accutane does is it helps keep those follicles or those pores open. It also influences your oil gland production, so decreases the sebum production, and also contributes to kind of decreasing that inflammatory cascade. So there are benefits, but a lot of these benefits that you can get from medication, we know that, you know, when we looking at gut health, has a profound impact on your skin health. There's a significant gut-skin connection. There's a significant brain-skin-gut connection. And so one of the first things that I would recommend now, and it's not something that, you know, we talked about when I was in residency or even when I was, you know, beginning my derm career, because the literature suppressed the information about, you know, does diet really make a difference? But back in the 1930s, Stokes and Pillsbury were two dermatologists who really looked at the gut-skin connection, as well as like the impact of anxiety and emotional concerns and how that plays out with skin. And so looking at what we're eating, there definitely is a correlation for many people between dairy intake and sugar intake and the severity of their acne. So just by eliminating those two biggies, a lot of people's skin improves dramatically.
Well, and it speaks to the concept of getting under the hood. Mm-hmm. Right. When we start to go upstream, and I'm always surprised how many people come in looking for support with respect to skin, but that isn't necessarily something that has ever been mentioned to them before. So I love hearing that that is where you're at and where your experience is in acknowledging and seeing those results with the people that you've worked with. It's super powerful. You know, when we look at this idea of getting under the hood or going upstream or addressing the root cause, I suspect what we eat, how we think, and what we put on our skin are probably the three most powerful things that we can do in terms of supporting optimal skin health. Are there foods first and foremost, like let's go through all of those categories, but foods first and foremost that we should eliminate? I know you just talked about dairy and sugar, that can be most impactful in terms of skin, but conversely, foods we can include that are really helpful for the skin. I know everyone's all over their collagen these days in terms of being able to support skin health. What are your favorites?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about the collagen. And I think that just harkens back to how healthy is your gut, right? Because you have to be able to absorb that and then has to circulate. And so I know it's all the rage. I'd love to see the studies down the road. Like, really, let's look at being a dermatopathologist as well. I want to see the skin underneath the microscope of like, what, like how many millimeters of thickness, you know, are we increasing with the collagen? I mean, I don't think there's any harm in it. I just don't know how much good it's doing. I think it's truly a synergistic effect of not only what you're eating in terms of really, I think the biggest thing is eating an anti-inflammatory, low glycemic diet are probably the best recommendations. And for everyone, that may be different because what causes inflammation, like personally, I love avocado, but I can't eat a lot of it. I love nuts and seeds, but they don't always love me back. And so that causes irritation for my gut. Whereas for other people, they thrive on that, right? So I think it's really a matter of listening to your own body. This is, you know, I share this, like your skin is sending you messages all the time. Your body's sending you messages. And the goal is to hear them when they're just a whisper, not shouting. And so if you're eating all these foods that the media is saying like are so good for you, like the collagen or eating keto, but like you're bloated, you're fatigued and you feel like crap, well, then listen to your body that is not the right plan for you. But, you know, in general, for skin health, we know that sugar, added sugar, not necessarily from fruits and your veggies, but added sugars that are, you know, what you'll find in your jarred spaghetti sauces, your ketchups, your salad dressings, a lot of the cookies, the crackers, you know, the convenience foods. We know that sugar contributes to the formation of what we call AGEs, these accelerated glycation end products. And these AGEs, they kind of glom onto your collagen and your elastin, latch onto those proteins and make them stiff and more prone to break. And so that contributes to breakdown of collagen, contributing to your, you know, AGEs age you. So your collagen and your elastin, hyaluronic acid, they give you that youthful appearance. And we know that, you know, eating highly processed, high glycemic load in your diet generates more of these AGEs, and then that breaks down your collagen and gives, you know, can make your skin less supple, less firm. And in broad speaking strokes, I would just say, you know, foods that could be inflammatory, dairy, sugar, for some people it's gluten, you know, soy, corn, you know, mostly things that come in a box. So eating, you know, nutrient dense whole foods, fruits and veggies, your leafy greens, foods rich in vitamin C, and that's not just fruits. That's like your broccoli, you know, your cruciferous vegetables and other things as well, because vitamin C is critical to collagen formation. We need vitamin C to generate the supportive structure of our skin.
Great suggestions. What about things that we apply to our skin? There's just a never-ending supply of things that we as women can apply to our skin. Something came through my Instagram feed. They're like, this is the only cream you need. We'll take off your makeup. We will like be the base of your makeup. We will like prevent like it's unbelievable how much stuff is thrown at us. And part of it is like, first, how do we navigate it? Because you don't possibly need it all. And two, like, what are the key things that we need to be looking at in terms of ingredients on the things that we put in our skin that are actually going to prevent damage to our broader health or our topical microbiome or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, those are great. That's a great question. So I'm a huge fan of just keeping it simple. And part of that is I'm a bit lazy.
I love it.
I mean, you know, we go to these derm conferences and they throw tons of stuff at you, and you look at the back of the bottle and it's got BHT and parabens and, you know, phthalates and all these other things. You're like, oh, good grief. Like, I don't need that on my skin. So, you know, using a gentle cleanser, a non-foaming cleanser, morning, evening, you know, over the counter, you know, a big fan thing, brand that lots of dermatologists love to recommend is Cetaphil. Maybe it's not the cleanest, but it is gentle and it is well tolerated. And that's easily, you know, you can get that over the counter, no problem, but like a gentle cleanser, a serum that has vitamin C and vitamin E together is a potent combination because, the literature has shown that those two together rather than individually really helps combat the environmental oxidative stress that you're exposed to on a daily basis, which isn't just the sun, it's our air pollution, it's our air quality. And then the third product that I would recommend is, we talked about Accutane, but topical retinoids, better known as Retin-A, hands down, I think it is a great tool to have in your toolbox to help skin cell turnover. We use it in many instances to minimize precursors to skin cancer. You can get now over the counter as well. Branded as Differin. It used to be a prescription, but Differin now you can get. But that being said, topical retinoids can cause irritation. They can cause dryness. They can lead to a rash in certain people. So you got to start slow, like a tiny little bit, like once a week, and then gradually increase your frequency to a few times a week. But you got to go slow with it. So literally, I think you need four products. You need a cleanser, a serum that has vitamin C and E, a topical retinoid, and then I do recommend a moisturizer that has sunscreen on a daily basis, because even though I take a stand against sunscreen, that it really should be your last line of defense, not your first, it is beneficial to help you defend against the damaging UV rays. And most people only use a fraction of the sunscreen that's recommended. So you are still getting your UVB rays to help generate your vitamin D production. So that's also another myth I'd like to debunk, that sunscreen is not the cause of vitamin D deficiency, nor is it the cause of skin cancer. So I'm just controversial or not, I'm putting that out there.
Yeah, well, I was gonna ask you your take on sunscreen, because it is a controversial topic. And I feel like when we get into, if we go deep on some of these health blogs and forums, I mean, the conspiracy theories are broad and aggressive in terms of sunscreen is actually the cause of skin cancer. And I would love to hear your perspective on this, because you have personal and professional experience with respect to this topic.
Yes, yes. So SPF is a sun protection factor, and that is only denotation for your UVB rays. We do not have a scale to measure protection against UVA rays. They do that in the lab to see how much is protected, but we don't actually have a numerical number. So when you are buying your sunscreen and it says SPF, please know that that's only how much UVB protection you're getting. But UVA rays, the ultraviolet A rays and the ultraviolet B rays together contribute to the formation of skin cancer. We always talk about UVB rays as being the rays that burn you, and UVA rays, because they penetrate more deeply into the skin, they contribute more to breakdown of your collagen and elastin, and they age you. But the two together can contribute to skin cancer. So even 100 doesn't block 100% of UVB rays. It's like 99%. That being said, studies have shown that people only apply like 25% of the recommended amount of sunscreen. So for an adult, when you're at the beach and you're not like me, like totally wearing a rash guard and covering my whole body, if you're wearing a teeny weeny bikini, some that are, God, they're super cute, you need a shot glass worth, like an ounce, to cover from your neck down. Right? So a typical bottle of sunscreen is 4 ounces. So let's say you and three of your girlfriends are going to the beach. You each put on the recommended amount of 1 ounce. That bottle of sunscreen should be in the trash after your first application. If you're staying at the beach for 2 additional hours, you know, you need to reapply, which means you need a second bottle of sunscreen.
Wow. Now, that's a lot of sunscreen.
It's a lot of sunscreen. But that being said, I mean, let's think about, like, how many of y'all have the same bottle of sunscreen in your bag all summer long?
Yeah, no, it's
or
true.
Or it's the next season, right? So the most of us are not using the recommended amount. So that means you're still getting a significant amount of sun exposure. So to blame sunscreen for the rise in the skin cancer, you know, epidemic, I think is short-sighted. It's not that. It's more of our lifestyle. It's how we're living. We are on our devices. We are inside. We are not getting out in nature. And then if you live in a place like I do in the Pacific Northwest, where it's like cloudy and gray and you want to get out of Dodge and you're going to Mexico or Hawaii, and then you're frying the crud out of your skin because your skin has need the light of day in like, you know, 8 months.
Yeah, it's true.
You get this burst of like intense sun. That's really where the damage comes in, because your body can't handle that intense, like, oxidative stress. And it's doing its very best, but it can't necessarily repair and recover completely. And then you keep doing that over and over and over again. And those hits to your DNA, they just build up, and then that contributes to skin cancer.
And is there a type? I mean, I think that nanotechnology with respect to sunscreen is another piece that I think is important to look at, because we're talking about toxicity of putting things on your skin. So are there, if we're all in for sunscreen, are there types of sunscreens and ingredients that, again, we should be aware of, or we should be ensuring are included?
Sure. So I am a big fan of the physical sunblockers, which are the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. Now, I know titanium dioxide as well as zinc has gotten a bad rap. The chemical sunscreens, the oxybenzones, the avobenzones, the oxycinnamates, we know that oxybenzone has gotten a lot of bad press because of for endocrine disruption, disrupting the coral reefs, and has been banned, in Hawaii. More than that, avobenzone is like one of the number one causes of allergic contact dermatitis. So I always steer away from the chemical blockers because they're not necessarily well tolerated. They can irritate the skin. They also require that when you put them on, you have to wait 20 minutes before you go out in the sun, because it requires that kind of chemical reaction. They're absorbed into the skin. And then when the sunlight hits, that's kind of how it works. And so if you ever put on a sunscreen that has these chemical ingredients, if you feel kind of a warmth or heat afterwards, that's, kind of this chemical reaction taking place on your skin. The physical blockers like the zinc, it's safe to use in all ages. So like you could buy one bottle of sunscreen for your family, whether you have littles or teenage kids to adults. And that's another thing I want everyone to know. It is a marketing ploy. I don't know if the companies are going to be pissed listening to this, but actually one of the manufacturers of the sunscreen told me, so I was like, what is the difference between the baby and the regular? And he just looked at me point blank and was like, nothing.
Oh, wow.
Save your pennies and just buy a zinc-based sunscreen that you can use on your entire family.
Fair enough. And are there any spray-on sunscreens that work? Like, I'm the mom of three, and I'm like, is there one somewhere that is easy and doable?
Yeah, so sprays are fantastic, especially for guys who don't have a full head of hair, or they've got a bald spot, you can spray it right on there. The problem I see with sprays is that you spray it on, but you still got to rub it in. Otherwise, you're going to have missed spots. So Kula has a great one, Garden Goddess. These are zinc-based sunscreens. They're great. That being said, you still, like, for those wiggly kids, like, spray it on and then just make it like a happy dance hug or some fun game out of it, because you still got to rub it in. Otherwise, they're going to have splotchy spots that are kind of unprotected, and you risk sunburn in those areas.
Yeah, this is all honestly such great advice, especially as I know so many people are trying to get away for the holiday period and moving into the winter, and they're doing exactly what you said. They're going from dark and gray and overcast to these overwhelming exposures to sunshine. So the advice is absolutely timely for people.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing too is, I think it's huge to protect yourself, with hats and clothing, but really eating and sleeping well, and changing the lens on your stress. We can't get rid of stress, but it's all about how we manage it. Nourishing your body from the inside out is so huge, and being able to build up your reserves to deal with the stresses from your environment when you go outdoors. So there's been a huge amount of literature coming out, especially with regards to sleep, and the impact that sleep has on our skin, and especially with skin cancer too. So, we generate melatonin, which is this powerful antioxidant when we sleep, and they're actually using it topically for skin cancer management and prevention. So, don't underestimate getting a good night's sleep as part of your sun strategy.
Have they seen correlations? And you may not know this, but just as we're talking about it, I feel like there's two types of lack of sleep. There's those people who burn the candle at both ends and they just stay up really late and they have to get up early for work. And then there are those people who cannot sleep. Have they differentiated lack of sleep? I'm just curious whether or not mechanistically there's a different relationship there.
You know, that's a really interesting question, and I have not come across that. What I have found, though, is those individuals with sleep apnea, they have found a correlation between the aggressiveness of melanoma in particular in those individuals who suffer from sleep apnea versus those who don't. But in terms of the disorder, like sleep disorders of like insomnia, you know, or the actual disorder and differentiating, I have not come across that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have expected necessarily that you would. I just thought it would be really interesting to start to understand that, even just on that functional medicine perspective, different relationship with respect to skin. Have you found in working with people that there are certain habits that you see most common in those people who just have that amazing glowing skin, or even like unique features of those people? Like, I feel like there's certain genetic SNPs that I feel like I see over and over again with respect to people who have this impeccable skin. But have you observed anything?
Well, that's interesting. It'd be interesting because I don't do a lot of genetics, so I'd love to hear about that. What I have found, though, is the people who really prioritize self-care. And I used to think that that was a bunch of hooey and self-indulgent, but the people who, like, hearkening back to like what our grandparents did, where they met up with their girlfriends or like played bridge, like my grandmother played bridge with her girlfriends every week, you know, would meet up for walks and other things. Like, her skin was beautiful, right? It was like she was just living, and it literally was taking those moments to relish and cherish the day to day, even if they seem mundane things, and just totally being more present. And I have found the same with a lot of the women that I encounter that really don't, skin is not their issue, right? They really have embraced carving out time in their day-to-day to put themselves at the forefront.
Yeah, I love it. And it's such a powerful reminder. Our body is a series of interconnected systems. What is happening in one system puts pressure on another. We understand this intuitively, and yet the most powerful medical system in the world, Western medicine, continues to evaluate our health in individualized silos. We have assessments related to cardiovascular health, oncology, respirology, dermatology. We have individual silos of expertise. When we assess the body from a functional perspective in our practice, we want to understand not whether you are necessarily fine in all of these different systems, but whether or not they are functioning in an integrative manner in a way that moves you closer to optimal health. While there are lots of functional tests that we can do to be able to assess that, technology is enabling us to start to look at this thing on the basis of artificial intelligence through the aggregation of data. We do this in our practice using a tool called Living Matrix, and I want to make this assessment available to you. If you go to our new website, AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com, on the front page, you will see an opportunity for you to opt in into your personalized functional medicine quiz. Completing this questionnaire will take approximately 40 minutes of your time, and when you're finished, we're going to prompt you to have an opportunity to sit down from someone on our medical team to review your individualized results. We are all on big missions. We are all trying to change the world. It's no longer sufficient for our health to simply be fine. For us to achieve what we want to do as badass women with a vision for how we can help the world, we need to move our health to a place of optimal. And I invite all of you the opportunity to see how close to that line you really are. Go to AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com and do your quiz today. And I actually think this is a really cool spot to transition to the second part of the interview, because it speaks to exactly what you were just talking to. And this second part of the interview, I call our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we would have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got quick, rapid fire questions coming at you to give everyone listening a sense of how you live your life and some of the things that you bring to the table.
Okay.
You ready? Everyone gets so nervous before there's no math involved. There's like no skill testing questions. It's super easy. First question, do you have a consistent evening routine? If so, can you share?
So when I come upstairs, I don't turn on my bedroom light. I have a salt lamp on my bedside table. And so as soon as I walk in the room, I fumble around and I turn that on. And then I also get I have a chili pad on my bed. I don't know if you use that, but
I don't, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. And so basically it's a glorified, heating/cooling pad that you put on your bed. And it has been a game changer for me to regulate my body temperature, especially if the kids' schedules have, gone haywire and I have eaten a little later in the evening. Cause then I'll run hot, so I can turn my temp down, and that helps me sleep much better. And then I do my, skincare routine, which is I just wash my face, and I actually made a serum, for myself, which has rosehip oil and some vitamin C and some other, things. And I'll put that on.
Amazing. Do you put vitamin E in the serum that you made?
Yeah, I do.
See, I was listening. I mostly just wanted to point that out. I was curious when you mentioned that, and then we'll go back to the rapid fire. But do you have a vitamin C, vitamin E serum that you recommend that people can access commercially?
SkinCeuticals has one. I mean, may not be the cleanest, but they have CE Ferulic, which is good. IS Clinical also is, I think that's mostly just vitamin C, but that is one that is readily available. But the CE Ferulic is really consistently get a good one.
Okay, amazing. Okay, I'm back to my rapid fire.
Okay.
Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
Oh, I am reading nonfiction, Jon Kabat-Zinn, the catastrophic living,
Full Catastrophe Living?
Full Catastrophe Living, yeah. Yes.
Classic.
It is classic. And I read bits and pieces before, but this, I actually gave a lecture at Bastyr University, which is the naturopathic school here in Washington, and their bookstore was open, and they had it on the bookshelf, and I was like, oh my God, I got to get this. And it's huge. So I'm
slowly getting through it.
Yeah.
I love it. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Exercise, every day. And it used to be ultra marathon. It used to be running for hours. Right. And now it is, Pilates. And so for me, I'm not very good at meditation. Hence I'm also mindfulness-based stress reduction. I am going to practice what I'm preaching. But for me, Pilates is not just exercise; it's a moving meditation, because it is so damn hard, and you got to focus so hard.
Right,
in and out. For me, that is it serves two purposes: it's exercise, and it's really just kind of centering me.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Other than making kick-ass almond flour cookie, I think it's listening and putting pieces together and solving puzzles. That is one strength that that's why I went into DermPath. It's patterns and hearing people's story and pulling from all different aspects of their lives. It's not just what their symptoms, all the segments, and putting it together and distilling it down.
I love that. And it is a unique ability to be able to do that and pull all these concepts together. I love it. What do you do for fun or play?
Fun or play. So I think to me, exercise is both fun and play, but dance parties in the house with the kids.
Yeah, nice.
Disco ball, so.
Perfect. I love asking adults what they do for fun or play, because they're either enthusiastic like you are, or there's just this blank silence. And they're like, what do you mean by play? It's one of my favorite things to ask people. But when I have guests on the podcast, they typically have really good answers. But I really like to ask people this question. It's so fascinating. Last question for you, Kara. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I truly believe we can learn to become. I think maybe some people come out of the womb, or if their parents were entrepreneurs, they've got great role models and from a young age, they know it. But this shit is new for me. Yeah. I mean, I was in medicine. How much more linear could you be? You right. follow a rule, see one, you do one, you teach one. And this is like completely new. So I would say absolutely. It's certainly possible to learn it. I'm learning. I'm still learning. I'm learning moment by moment.
Well, I love it. And you're doing an incredible job. And I know people have, like I do, a million questions that they still want to ask you. Where can they find you and track you down to learn more about what you're up to?
Yeah. So my site is Resilient Health Institute, and the website is chooseresilience.com. And Instagram at Resiliency Blueprint or at Dr. Kara Barr.
Amazing. Dr. Barr, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. This has really been really valuable and super interesting. And thanks so much for your time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.